Hello, everybody. Welcome in. It's the Fan Hockey Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network, Sportsnet 360, and wherever you get your podcast. Matt Marchese, Mike Buda here with you, and it's here. It's been 229 days since the initial six players were announced for the Four Nations faceoff, and now we're just hours away from the first best-on-best tournament since the 2016 World Cup of Hockey. Buttes, I like your shirt. Is that are you just warming up for your eventual bet loss?
It's giving you an actual potential look. But you have a different idea. So you got to come in with a beautiful little sweater on, white underneath. You business casual to you. I got dress pants on, I got a dress shirt on, and I got a plaid shirt on.
Which, wait, what's
you
the dress shirt?
Just a dress. It's not rock. There's no rock band on it or anything like
that. Whoa, hold on a second.
Ooh,
that's not a dress
shirt. Stevie Shang and the Stamps here?
A dress shirt. What was that?
What's your band called again?
Shane Smith and the Saints.
There you go. Stevie Smith and the Shanks. I obviously don't have an affinity for your band. We have to tell this story before we get on because it's a carryover from our story with, I couldn't stop laughing about this, especially when you read the back end of it to me. So yesterday we had Mayday on Brad May, and he was talking about all the different tough guys. And I'm going to carve this. If I can't say Kokichev, this is Barry Tobogadung. Tobogadung?
I think that's correct.
Okay, so he was a tough guy with the Oshawa Generals. And he had, I guess, the one day, they've got this incredible picture of him wearing a headdress, skating around the Peterborough Petes, threatening them before a playoff game, just, and then he lines up and does the national anthem in the headdress. But a funny carry up to the story, Dale Gray calls me this morning and says that, and he was drafted in the third round, I think he said 1981, we looked it up.
By the Philadelphia Flyers.
So the Philadelphia Flyers draft him at the Old Forum, and he stands up to go down to the draft table, and his foot goes through the chair, and if you ever think about these old Maple Leaf guards, Old Forum, I can see how this would happen. It's like an animal trap.
Yeah.
But he gets stuck in the chair. And he can't get out, so the Flyers have to go up and deliver his jersey and his hat in the stands. Okay, in the stands, they have to, and he's still stuck there. Now, you tell me the backup how long.
The rumor is that he's stuck there for 2 hours.
2 hours. 2 hours. And this guy's a tough guy. I guess he's like 5'10", 215 pounds. Very short fuse, stuck in the, so he's stuck. And then what was the follow-up comment from the guy said?
It was from NHL executive vice president at the time, Brian O'Neill, joked that the Flyers could be sure that Barry would be available for all their games in Montreal. Now, he was drafted in the third round, 47th overall. Could you imagine if he was drafted, like, he has to sit there a long time.
It was a lot more in seven rounds back then. I was talking, and John Shannon mentioned it was before the televised draft, so it wouldn't have been on television, which would be even more classic. If this was the way they do the draft now, obviously, now that they're changing back to the virtual draft.
There was 10 rounds.
10 rounds.
10 rounds.
You get stuck in your chair in the third round.
210 players selected.
You're probably still, it's about the ninth round you get out. And not out of your seat, out of your leg gets removed from the building. So.
Yeah, and Barry passed away in an unfortunate accident where he was trying to save his son. In Parry Sound, Ontario. Yep. It's actually, we got a message about that on our text line yesterday as well. So it's quite the story.
Well, when you start to think about some of these, and I love the when you sit down, I love to listen. It's like the same thing when they used to do the Or Cherry games and stuff like that. You just kind of sit in the room and listen to like Brian Kilray and Don Cherry and these guys and Bert, the assistant coach from
Bert Templeton.
No, Bert. Bert O'Brien. He's forever been Brian Kilray's assistant coach. Bert O'Brien, wonderful guys. But they just sit there and tell.
And they've got tons.
And you don't even chip in. You just listen, and it's hilarious. It's just absolutely classic. So when I heard this one because I think Kenny Reed does. I've seen different books on the draft, and he's doing a book on scouting and scouting the art. And I've had some pretty funny draft stories. That's pretty good.
That is.
Unless you're Barry.
That would have been a tough one. Could you imagine being stuck there for that long? Just in that,
I can't imagine being like, if I'm in an elevator for like over, like I lose my marbles. But if being stuck, that'd be it. Unless, I don't know at that stage, he's 18 years old. I guess you can't. If it happened to me now, like Dean Lombardi got stuck in the seats in Brampton once. And we thought we'd lost him, and all we heard was crash, bang, and we looked behind, and Dean somehow by himself was entangled. He looked like Ric Flair had him in the figure four, And somehow he was locked and hooked into a seat at the old Brampton Powerade Center. And we just, of course, it's your boss and you're not supposed to laugh. And we were doing the old hidden giggles. Like, and then somebody's got to go get him out because he was stuck.
Who gets that job?
European scout.
Or an intern?
Intern. You can't go up. I'd be laughing too hard. And he's pride. And he's like, what? And he's looking around like, what happened? Like, he got hit by a sniper. It's just you up there alone. It's just you by yourself, Dino.
Oh, man. That's a great follow-up from yesterday. So, Canada, Sweden tonight. And we're going to be joined by Todd McClellan in just a few moments. The Red Hot Red Wings.
It's pretty cool. Yesterday we had... We had Chris now to hear from some of these coaches and their, I guess these guys, because they said you never have any time off in hockey.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, it's got to be a unique time for some of them. I'm sure Todd's chomping at the bit. I mean, he was out of it for a little while and to come back and have his team heating up the way they are. But these guys to just have a few days to let their, it was like I talked to, I talked to Scotty O'Neill and he's in, that's why it was funny. Chris Knobloch's in Edmonton. The snow because his kids are in school. And they're on a run too, so it's not just like coaches that are struggling. That we kind of timed it to have guys that are doing very well, so the other guys that aren't doing so well, they can really enjoy their break. But who was it? Scotty O'Neill in Hawaii.
Coconuts, pineapples, pina coladas.
Trying to figure out the time difference to come on. And I think we've got Ryan Huska and then Spencer Carver. So we got some fun chats with some coaches later in this week.
But well, the
Todd's awesome. I was with Todd in Los Angeles.
Well, you can say nice things about him. He's on the air now. Todd McClellan, head coach of the Detroit Red Wings.
Nice
Todd, how are you today?
I'm doing fine, fellas. How are you guys?
Good. Checks in the mail if you want feuds from Todd.
Oh, yeah.
Saying all those nice things, I guess, eh?
No, it's hilarious. Because Todd, you said you were, I'm assuming you still were living in Los Angeles. You went from Detroit, you flew right down to Los Angeles to do some moving and then right back to Detroit?
Yeah, we played Saturday afternoon against Tampa and didn't go so well for us, but took a red eye out to L.A., helped my wife pack a moving truck, and we're already back in Detroit waiting for it to meet us at this end. So for as much as everybody gets to enjoy the beach and relax, if you're not part of the Four Nations, that's not what's going on in my world.
just pray that you have better weather than Chris Knobloch has in Edmonton right now.
Chris Knobloch stuck with his kids in Edmonton. It's not all buzz and roses.
7 inches of snow later on today, so that'll just add to the fun.
You're a Western boy, though. That's nothing for you. Although when you know you're in some warm climates before, I don't know. Has your body adjusted back to Detroit weather yet?
Well, as Futes will attest to you, that California weather grows on you quite quickly, and I had a good dose of it in San Jose and certainly in L.A.
I was going to say, Todd, that's just the hockey gods getting back at you for all those days in the sunshine. All those days in the sunshine. Yeah.
So, Todd, I want to...
Back is, you know what?
So, I wanted to ask you, before we get into a chat about your team right now and taking them over mid-season here, so... You know, sometimes we forget about things that have happened in hockey history. And for whatever reason, sometimes I forget about Team North America at the World Cup of Hockey in 2016 that had Connor McDavid, Austin Matthews, Nathan MacKinnon, Jack Eichel, Connor Hellebuck, among others, who are going to play a big role in this tournament now. And you were the head coach of that team. Do you ever look back on that and just think about that group of players being together at such a young age and how special it was and how it may never happen again and probably won't happen ever again?
Yeah, I look back all the time and don't forget about that team because it was so special and so unique. The players now that are involved in the National Hockey League that played on that team are the power brokers. They're the superstars. They're the ones that are driving ratings and fans want to see these players play. They filled up teams here with the Four Nation tournament that's about to start. So a really special group of players, unique time for them to come together and an incredible experience for all of us. So I won't forget that. And I reflect back on it often.
Thinking about things going full circle, obviously you won a cup as an assistant in Detroit and you've had a tremendous career as a head coach moving on from that. What is it like to come back full circle now as the head guy back to where you kind of pro career started there?
Yeah, it's special. really unique, original six team, leaving Detroit when, you know, on a high, winning a Stanley Cup, cutting my teeth somewhere else, and then coming back here is really special. A little bit of a time warp. A lot of people are still involved in the organization, which speaks volumes to the Ilitch family and how they treat their employees. But new arena, obviously new players, a new task that's in front of us. But the simple fact that I was a Red Wing and entered into the National Hockey League back in 05 with this team, and now getting to come back and full circle being involved with it again is real special.
What's your, I heard you talking about it. I mean, obviously when you've been around and you've had some stops, and then I was thinking about your schedule too, because I know you went in and you had some teams. I know I only had the after where I was let go in Los Angeles and stuff like that. And it was tough and stuff. And I had the 1 year with Carolina, but it was always looking at, and I saw on one of your trips through there, you were going through Edmonton and LA and you had some success, but you talked about, so not only beating some of your old teams, but the chance you talked about looking at some of the guys that you kind of looked at as family that are now opponents, just a little bit about that, the relationships that you build and now all of a sudden you're playing against them so quickly.
Yeah, I think when you assume a coaching position, you put on many different hats. Obviously, you got to be responsible for wins and losses and structure and discipline and all that type of stuff. But, I look at it as like being a father figure to a group of younger, older men and trying to keep the family together. And when you look at it that from that perspective, you create great relationships. They're not always easy ones. As we know, anybody that has had children or have to deal with certain situations, it's not always easy, but the closeness, the respect between player and coach exists, and it's something that I am proud of developing with a lot of players. And as you go through some of these teams that you've been around, whether it was Team North America or long-term teams like LA, Edmonton, San Jose, there's a lot of players and a lot of people involved in organizations that you were close to, and the contact, the personal contact when you wheel into these towns is special. And it's something that's really important to me. And I still get texts from players that are still active on other teams looking, hey, you know, what are you seeing in my game? Can you help me? And that means a lot to me. I cherish that.
And you say to them, no, I'm somewhere else right now. I've got to worry about my team. No, I'm just kidding.
You know, it's unbelievable when you think. I talked to Daryl Sutter about that as well, and it's amazing the impact that you guys, I know some guys that I've drafted. I mean, like, for example, Kyle Clifford's getting his number retired coming up here in Barrie, that I obviously stay in touch with all the guys, but I just find it amazing that even when you move on, that the players still, those relationships that you guys as coaches, that you have the bond that you have, that they still reach out to you. Because I know Daryl was telling me, I mean, Jake Muzzin, who at the time when Daryl was let go was like, his confidence was about as low as possible with Daryl. And then you go back and you kind of, once you regroup on things and look at yourself in the mirror and the success that Muzz had under Daryl, he called him back when he was kind of going into Toronto to talk about his game. I just think that's the ultimate ultimate sign of respect. It's awesome.
Well, it definitely is, and it's two-way. I can reach out to Joe Pavelski and say, hey, you're watching hockey. What do you think of our team here in L.A. or in Detroit, for that matter? And he'll give you an honest opinion, just because that respect factor has been built up. And, those are relationships that aren't often talked about media-wise. Nobody writes about them. Nobody wants them to be shared or known. They're personal, but they exist with a ton of players all over the place. And the simple fact is, it's not always easy. But if you can regroup years later and look each other in the eye and have a mutual respect for each other, something's gone right.
Todd McLellan, head coach of the Detroit Red Wings, running Matt Marchese and Mike Fuda here on the Fan Hockey Show. So the club's 15-5-1 since you took over. And, I'll be completely honest. Before you got there, I was talking about, you know, this team lacks an identity, and I don't know what they are. Well, you know, since you got there, I think we figured it out pretty quick, especially based on a 15-5-1 record. What was the message to the players when you took over?
Well, the day one was pretty simple. I didn't know a lot of the characters there. In fact, I didn't know how they were playing or the systems or anything. We just asked them to play a little faster, a little harder, and a little smarter. Started against the Leafs. I think we were down 5-0 after two periods, so that didn't go over real well. But from that point on, they began to put those principles into play. We began to work on structure. We talked a lot about the belief system and how important it was to build that up and maintain it no matter what happened, good or bad. And the players have been really receptive. It's been an outstanding group to be around. They want to win. They want to perform well. And they've been very accepting of new ways. They're finding ways to make things work or systems work or groups of players work rather than poking holes in it. And it can go one way or the other. And fortunately for us, they're finding ways.
When you talk about, I mean, again, I was 14 years with the Kings and I was mostly with Dean and then the latter half with Blakey. From a coaching standpoint, I mean, you've had different stops along the way. Is it a similar, I mean, I guess every personal relationship's dinner, is the communication between a general manager and a coach, is it vastly different from organization to organization or is generally it similar?
Well, you'd like to make it as smooth as possible and as regular as possible, but it does differ from organization to organization. Each manager has his own style and his own emotional button, I guess, and the coaches do as well. And sometimes managers like to meet after games, and there's a lot of emotion in it. Other managers meet in the morning. Some won't meet for a couple days, but then review everything. So everyone that I've had has been outstanding. The support that I've received from any of them has been top notch. So there hasn't been a huge difference in anything along that lines. But the lines of communication or the timing of communication has varied from manager to manager.
So you mentioned that when you took this team over, you didn't really know a lot of the cast and crew that made up the team. But now that you've had a chance to be around them, who is the player that you appreciate even more after being around them and getting to watch them every day, whether it be what they do on the ice or off the ice?
Well, I think there's some simple, obvious answers. A guy like Mo Sider, who I was well aware of, heard a lot about him. But when you're in the West, you don't pay a lot of attention to the Eastern Conference other than when you go to play them. And this guy is everything he's been mentioned and more. And I think there's so much runway left with him. He's got a lot of growth in front of him as far as physicality, strength, experience, learning the game a little bit more, leadership skills. I think it's endless, and he's as good as he is right now. Big surprise for me is Albert Johansson. Didn't know him, didn't know how he played, didn't even know what he looked like on the ice, really, to tell you the truth. And when we got here, he wasn't in the lineup. Jeff Petrie got injured and he got his opportunity. And since then he's played in our top four on the back end and been very good. So those are two of the guys, but everybody, all of the players, you have to get to know quickly and you think you know them, but you really don't until you are standing beside them on the bench. You sense frustration, you sense joy, all the emotions that come into everything, then you truly can create a relationship. And that's where we're at right now.
Your team's off to such a great start. I guess we've got this tournament coming up. It's been on the schedule, so it's not something that everybody didn't know about. When do you guys, I know you've got some players obviously there. When do you guys get back at it? I mean, do you have any time? I mean, obviously, here's a different situation, Todd. You said you've traveled, you're moving and stuff like that. But do you get any opportunity to sit down and enjoy this tournament? And when do you guys get back at it with the Wings?
Yeah, we do. I'm in Detroit now. I'm not going anywhere. I'll be able to watch the games and follow it closely, just like the rest of the hockey world will be. But we start up on the 18th again, I believe, in the afternoon. And we have 4 days before we play our first game, I think, against Minnesota. That will be an opportunity for us to actually drill into them, a few structure things, a few system concepts that we haven't got to yet. We'll approach it as a bit of a mini training camp and then get ready to play. And when the games come, they're going to come fast and they're going to be intense for not only the Red Wings, but for a lot of teams, just simply because there's there's so many teams still in it this year.
Are you going to be at weigh-ins when they get back or what?
Well, no, because I might have to weigh in myself, and that wouldn't be a good thing. So,
I'm glad that you mentioned just like a mini training camp when you get back here. Do you think that's beneficial for you having taken over, you know, when you did, and that you haven't had a full training camp, and that maybe this is even more of an opportunity for you to really get down and into the nitty gritty with this group?
I think it will be beneficial. Not necessarily for me, but for the players, and they're the most important people. You know, we can walk them through drills and scenarios so that they understand our language and clarify what we're talking about a little bit. Most of this has been done on the fly. It's been done with video and 10 minutes in practice here or there. So this will give us a time to slow things down, to talk about them, to experiment a little bit with them. Maybe what we have in mind for them won't fit this team and we'll have to adjust. But that's just basically where we're at as a group, and we'll take the time and try and make the best of it.
Have you guys, how has your practice schedule been? Because I know we had spoken to a few people about just with the condensed season and having, you know, a lot of four-game weeks and all that. Have you guys been able to practice a lot, or is that just something that, you know, in your time coaching over the last 4 or 5 years that you've just had a lot less practice time in general?
Well, in general, a lot less, but we've made it a priority here to, you know, to sacrifice something else somewhere just to get a little more practice time in. So instead of a 20-25 minute skate, we're probably at 30-35 minutes. That extra 10 minutes can mean a lot. But one thing that I found with being out east here, I've never coached in the east, is that the return flights are usually an extra day on the road. And then flying back from Seattle, play there Tuesday, fly back Wednesday. So you lose a full day that way. And it doesn't qualify for a PA off day. So you got to find them another day. And it, you just lose a lot of time. So being efficient, not grinding them too hard when you practice, but getting to the point and teaching quickly is a must, I think, in the NHL now.
Okay, so I got to ask you this, because we look at the standings every day and our heads spin. It's like the slots in Vegas. You just never know which is going to come up here. I know you get so caught up as a coach in the day-to-day because you're coaching to win every game, and I understand that. But do you ever catch yourself looking at the standings going, oh my goodness, there's so many teams in this grouping here? Or do you just say, hey, we're trying to win as many games as possible, and where we end up at the end of the season, that's what matters?
Well, we've asked the group when we got here, we asked them to ignore streaks, whether they're win streaks or losing streaks. Get your nose out of the standings. Focus on what's in front of you, whether that's today's practice or just tomorrow's game. Let's put our best effort forward, and at the end of the night, we'll look up at the score. And if it favors us, great. That probably means we're moving in the right direction. And if it doesn't, well, then we got work to do. And we don't post the standings in our locker room. We haven't talked about playoffs. We haven't talked about win streaks or losing streaks. We've just tried to focus on what's in front of us. And I know that's cliche. A lot of coaches will say that, but it's been the best way for us. Baby steps rather than running the whole marathon at once.
Todd, that it makes me just think of something. So that in itself, I was going back to our time in Los Angeles. Would that be your call, the stuff that's on the like segments? And I remember there, because just seeing it, we always had the standings. We're always in the lounge, right? On the wall kind of thing. Is that something the coach decides, or is that just something they were there when you arrived in Los Angeles? And or do you kind of get to make up your own hypothetical? Go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, the coaches can control the environment. You know, we can decide what we want in the environment as far as slogans. And some teams, they plaster the locker room full of stuff, and they've got T-shirts and you name it. I'm not that big on that type of stuff. I think we pick one theme and we stick to it. And we don't need to see it every day. If seeing it is going to motivate us, then we're probably in it for the wrong reason. We should be living it every day. So that's how I go about it, but each to their own. And some teams, you know, have better results in a different way.
Well, I really, honestly, I mean, we got to let you go here, but I totally appreciate it. I appreciated very much the short time that we worked together because I get to see your professionalism and up close. And I'm so glad that you're back where you belong behind a bench and no shocking that the Red Wings are back in the thick of things.
Well, I'm glad that I had my time with you two futes. You learn something from everybody you cross paths with in this game. And I learned a lot from you, and I'm glad that I'm back too, and I'm happy for you and your show there. So thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for doing this, Todd. We greatly appreciate it. Good luck the rest of the way, and hopefully we can chat down the road.
Thank you. Take care.
Todd McLellan, Detroit Red Wings head coach, 15-5-1.
He's like the first time you meet him, and he's very funny. Like all coaches, right? There's the coach, and they're in coach mode, but he's such a... There's guys that have that presence when they talk to a room that right away, you know, mm-hmm. that he's got that.
Yeah, you can tell.
It's a gift too, because I've seen the other direction as well. But it's to be able to speak and to be able to articulate stuff and get your point across and be fair. And that's the one thing that he's always been.
Well, he's had success everywhere he's gone.
Rob Blake had said, like, that was who he always... I asked him when he first became the general manager, if you had your choice of any coach... First of all, he said the best coach he ever had was he played for Todd in San Jose.
I was going to say, yeah.
Right? And he felt he was the best coach he had ever had. And then if he had a choice, obviously, you know, we kind of screwed things up a little bit because I think we hired somebody in a bit of a rush, and Todd became available like 2 weeks later. Mm-hmm. He was let go. And I think that's who Blakey wanted to coach all along. So... kind of set us back a little bit, and then to get Todd in there and to see the way once again you start to reestablish your winning cultures, it's pretty fun to watch.
Yeah, Todd McLellan is a really good coach, and he's doing really good things with the Detroit Red Wings. Has them in a playoff spot as of right now, but don't tell him because he hasn't looked at the standings. We're going to take a break. When we come back, Anna Dua joins us. She's back. For 1 week anyway, until she hits the road again, or maybe 2 weeks she's back. I don't know.
We're going to talk about your... all your same picks you have for the Four Nations.
She might be wearing a Canada jersey when she comes in here, though.
No.
I have a feeling.
If you want to have another bet, I say she's probably wearing a Leaf jersey before she's wearing a Canadian jersey.
Oh, what do you want to bet on that?
Dinner.
Okay.
You know she's wearing a Canadian... First of all, if this is a setup, you guys are always on the same page with your picks.
No. I just saw a picture that she posted. Thanking the wonderful jersey makers at Fanatics.
So she picks the U.S. and she's coming in with, this is totally Anna.
Okay. Dinner's on the line. That's coming up. You'll find out the answer to the bet when we come back. It's the Fan Hockey Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network, Sportsnet 360, and wherever you get your podcast.
Big opinions and in-depth conversations covering the Leafs, Jays, Raptors, and the NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Somebody's got to mute this guy's mic in the commercial break. Honestly, this is craziness.
Somebody's got to listen, mute you with your... No. It wasn't, because it was. He's already gone back in his bed. So
what?
That's fine.
No, well, I didn't.
It's okay.
No.
It's okay.
Okay, let's roll back the tape.
You don't have to roll back the tape. The question was, you said, I bet you Anna comes in wearing a Team Canada jersey.
And I
said, would you like to bet?
No, you said.
No, that was the first thing I said.
You said,
bet.
I think she's
and
more
I said,
likely to be wearing
she's more
a
likely
Leaf jersey,
to be wearing a Leaf jersey.
Which means.
Judged by her picks. Than a Team Canada jersey, considering she picked the U.S. to win.
I have a justification for everything.
Okay, but she didn't. She didn't. Wear it, and all of a sudden you just pull out of the bet.
All right, well, I'll
get
buy
my
dinner.
Fobber fixed out there.
I'm working on it.
Fireballs.
I'm working on it.
What is this nickname?
It's a term that I use, and he's trying to take it over.
No, I'm not trying to take it over. I
now
just think
he says, "Hey, easy sailor."
I've been saying that for years, though.
Well, I've been saying, "Take it easy, fireballs." So
why is it plural? Why is it fireballs instead of fireball?
I don't know.
You there, can probably go either way.
There, get out.
Good
of here.
Job, pal. I can get
you
home safely.
You need a flathead screwdriver to fix it.
That's a real bad impression of me, by the way.
I know it is, but that was kind of the point. Anyway.
Anyways, back to the show.
Hi, Anna Dua.
Hello.
Welcome to the show.
Anna Dua's in studio.
Yes.
You should actually probably be sitting in between us right now. Yeah.
There's a lot going on here today, I fear.
Yes.
You know what else is going on today? The Four Nations face-off starts today. How excited are you for this tournament?
I am quite excited. I think it's a good viewing of international hockey that we haven't seen in quite some time. There's a lot of players that have never played together before in an international setting. So the players are pumped, and that makes me pumped. And yeah, I am really excited.
What were you saying about somebody looks so much better in a one-year post? You were talking about
Austin Matthews. I said Austin Matthews. Someone, a Leafs fan or like not maybe an American fan, tweeted at me and said, how does Austin Matthews look wearing a USA jersey to you? And I said he looks better wearing a Maple Leaf.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
They're all Canadian to me. I don't know. Like when I'm seeing like William Nylander on Team Sweden.
Well, he
Austin
is actually
Matthews,
half Canadian.
He was born here. And then when I see Austin Matthews lived here for like almost a decade. I don't know. Whatever. It's okay. They just give Canada.
Okay. How excited are you for this? You're checking to see if your fob works right.
Trying to turn your volume. Trying to turn your volume.
I hope the alarm's
trying
going
to turn
off
your
in
volume.
The, in
oh,
the garage right
oh, my
now.
Car.
Yeah.
It's just going up and down.
We're going to head home.
There we go. There we go. How am I excited? I'm very excited. First of all, I can't stand when we have night. I mean, during the hockey season, this reminds me of in the playoffs when it gets down. Like, the playoffs is heaven for me.
Yeah. Because
you got games every night. Yeah. And then as it gets down to the end, they got nights off in between. I realize how much I enjoy hockey and how much hockey I watch because the last two nights has been like bedlam trying to pretend I like watching basketball, which I told
but
you.
Then watch something else. Don't watch
no,
basketball.
I watch because I watch when I work out, I watch all those shows and stuff we talk about. Like we have other fame series and my documentaries and stuff. But at night, it's hockey time. Right. And then last night, completely lost. So had to watch Matt Bonner motivate Scotty Barnes to be a better player in the Raptors game, which was painful.
So I'll tell you this, like I actually feel like I get a little when there's not hockey on, when you're so ramped up that you feel almost off. Do you guys feel that same way too? Like when you have other things to focus on.
You've seen her on Instagram.
I know
she finds other things to do. She's a gallivanter.
I am a gallivanter.
She's partying in Seattle, then she's commercialing in Utah, then she's at birthday parties in Vancouver.
I'm a busy girl.
I'm on my couch.
Honestly, I didn't notice that we didn't have hockey these past couple of days. But that's only because I literally just got back to Toronto. So
I just assumed you were there.
At Four Nations, you never know. You never know with me.
She did official rules. She did all sorts of stuff.
I saw that.
She was all over the place. Okay, so what's the thing that we're most looking forward to in this tournament? There's a bunch of things, but I'll start with you, Anna. When you think about this tournament only being four teams, some people will argue that it's not best on best. Okay, fine, whatever. But what are you most looking forward to?
I think what I'm most looking forward to is, and I'm going to say this as a Canadian, all things aside, getting Sidney Crosby in a tournament like this, watching him play, and I know there was a little scare leading up to it, but he's all set, ready to go, and the players that get to play with Sidney Crosby, Connor McDavid, Nathan MacKinnon, Mitch Marner, it's just, when I think of hockey and international tournaments, for me and for a lot of Canadians, but specifically Canadians my age, Sidney Crosby's golden goal in the 2010 Olympics was probably the single greatest hockey moment I've ever witnessed. Mm-hmm. So getting to see him wearing that Team Canada uniform, and there's a lot of players on that team who are around my age who would probably say the same thing, and now they get the opportunity to play with him. So I just don't take it for granted watching Sidney Crosby play for Team Canada, and I think that's what I'm most looking forward to.
Are you going to echo those sentiments, Sailor?
No, I'm not. People my age are more on the coaching management side of this. I can't, and I'm not, this is no disrespect for the other two teams. I'm looking forward to U.S. Canada. Like it's must-see.
Like it has to be the final, or even just you're looking forward to Saturday.
I mean, Sweden could beat Canada. I mean, whatever. I want to see that game, and I want to see it twice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's just my take on it. I think, and I think the other teams are good enough that we could be completely see an upset, particularly that they're one game shots and that they're not, and we're not sure of, you know, exactly what's coming out of the net in Canada's goal. So it'll be interesting. I'm just excited to see it. The schedule breaks up well enough. It's weird. I mean, it's Friday night, no hockey. That's good.
An early night in the Marchese household.
It's Valentine's Day. It's an early night. You're not doing anything for your wife for Valentine's Day?
I have two kids.
Okay. I'm glad you Glad you directed that, dude.
Oh, my God.
I broke out into a sweat.
I got an idea. Anna, what are you doing on Friday night?
I'm doing nothing on Valentine's Day.
Would you like to come babysit my children?
Sure, yeah. Your wife deserves this.
Don't worry. Every day in the Marchese household is Valentine's Day.
He went out to a concert last week.
With your wife or with you?
Not with his wife.
With you?
No. Yeah, okay.
You go on more dates with your wife.
We go to hockey games. I don't go watch Stevie Saints and the Sailors play.
Shane Smith and the Stevie Saints and the Sailors.
He loves this band. He went by himself. He was in the mosh pit.
I did not go by myself. I was with my cousin
And so here's how old I am. I asked if he brought a lighter. And he's like, right now, you're probably, if you have a lighter, you're an arsonist. You have to hold up your phone now, right?
Wait, people had physical lighters at concerts?
Oh, stop it.
Yes, they did.
I don't want you to get scared.
Look at anything from.
How you pronounce that?
You did it again. She said she's got this Valley Girl thing when she said that we had a little skate air when Sidney Crosby was injured.
Yeah,
I didn't notice.
You didn't hear that?
We were talking because she said.
You spent so much time in LA. You should be used to this.
Listen, it's like when you came in and you said, look at my thing I got. Some ice. And then she said, we had a skit air with Sidney Crosby.
You're in a bullying mood today, Marchese, me.
No, he's just.
Sandy from Burlington texted us, Anna is clearly a rose working with thorns.
I am. Thank you. From where? Burlington?
Yep.
That's my hometown. Yes. Represent.
I agree.
So
Marchese's a prick. It's not the roses. It's not the roses.
Yeah.
Prickly.
The thing that I'm looking forward to is how quickly this tournament just flips to, hey, this is great, and then it's now it becomes war, for lack of a better term. That's what I'm waiting for.
You know what I heard that absolutely is going to be interesting to me as well, and this is, I guess, from a business side, that I have heard that the ticket sales in Montreal, first of all, is a Montreal Canadiens town. It's not necessarily the biggest Canada market, that there are tickets. Maybe not Saturday night, but there's quite a few tickets available for some of the other games. And that Boston, there's quite a few, like we could be a bit, maybe if USA plays Canada in the final or USA against anybody in the final, I'm sure they're going to fill it up, but there could be some empty seats.
I'd imagine that if Canada gets there and it's not against the US, that's still going to, like, Canadians will
flock.
Yeah, for sure.
If this was in certain markets, right, every game would be sold out.
It should be a sellout in Boston.
Yeah. I'm just saying that game should be a sellout, but I'm telling you, I don't believe that the round robin portion of the Boston thing is sold out.
That'd be very interesting. I'm curious to see what that looks like as well. I just want to see what this crowd is going to look like too. Again, we haven't had international best on best in forever. Like, this is your opportunity to really, you know, make your voices heard. That's the part I'm looking forward to. So I had a thought today. I was doing an interview earlier today on Sportsnet 590 The Fan with Daniele Franceschi, who does a fantastic job hosting.
He's the best.
And he asked me about Canada and the goaltending situation. And I had this epiphany. Are we just making too much of the goaltending situation when we look at the team that's in front of these goalies? And we can say, okay, yeah, Jordan Binnington's getting the start tonight and he struggled this season and even in previous seasons, but then you look at the team in front of him and say, should we really be overly concerned? Like, should we be making as much about the goaltending as we are?
Absolutely.
Really?
Yeah.
See,
It's something to talk about. I think we're going to be a problem, but I just look at the difference. I mean, I looked at your guys. How can you argue your guys pick for the MVP?
Sure.
It's Hellebuck. Hey, there's nobody thinking that Jordan Binnington, wouldn't that be something if we're talking about Jordan Binnington being the MVP of this tournament?
Sure.
How awesome would that be?
Yeah.
But I think it gets back to, it's what people do. You always kind of, as much as you're positive, I've picked Canada, the negativity of it that I come up with, and I hope I eat it on it, is that Logan Thompson is, we've always said statistically, there's not a goaltender that even is in the forefront here, and he is.
Mm-hmm.
And he is, and he's in Coconutville there with somebody enjoying themselves.
Maybe.
So I just find that's an interesting one. You kind of put yourself, and it's more the timing of it, the timing of having to announce your guys, your group. But at the time, his numbers were very worthy of Vite, at least being, way ahead of Montembeau, that's for sure.
Yeah. And is it a concern for you? Or?
It is the only concern for me. Like, I want Canada to win. I wanted to be able to choose Canada. And, like, I still would be really thrilled if my, like, analytical prediction of the U.S. winning is false, because that's what I want to happen. But when I'm taking a look at this, we just watched the World Juniors, guys, and we saw what happened to Team Canada when there were a lot of players left off that roster that should have been on that roster. And that's what I'm seeing for the goalie situation in Canada. And it's not just Logan Thompson. Logan Thompson's the big one, but a Darcy Kemper, a Mackenzie Blackwood, like, there's other guys who, honestly, I could have chosen three other goalies to be the goalies for Team Canada.
Mackenzie Blackwood, I'll just interject there. Mackenzie Blackwood, if he's with Colorado from the beginning of the season, Mackenzie Blackwood is
would be on this roster. And it's like, if I'm genuinely sitting here and saying there's three goalies I would have chosen that are not the three goalies going, maybe one or two, you swap it out. That's a huge concerning point for me when you take a look at the United States and see the goaltender depth that they have. And Canada has the best forward group in this tournament, but it's not like easy money against some of these teams, right?
Yeah. And no game, like, the other thing is when you talk about goaltending, nothing's a layup here. And I don't, like, when you get to these quote unquote best on best tournaments, you know, sometimes you get a, no disrespect, the Kazakhstan, or you get an Austria or a Denmark or whoever that is, you know, more of a layup than Sweden, the United States, and Finland. So you can work your goalies in, and you have five games in a preliminary round to play. You've got three games and a final here. So it's not like you have time to work these guys in and figure out who's the hot hand. Somebody, if Jordan Binnington doesn't have a good game tonight, guess what? Aiden Hill's getting the net on Saturday. And by the way, welcome Aiden Hill. You get the United States in your first game. That seems like a lot of fun.
That's what's supposed to be pressure is all about.
Sure.
Won a Stanley Cup 2 years ago. So it's something to talk about. Talking point. Again, you picked the Americans. Anna's picked the Americans. I've picked Canada. We picked our team. You know what was interesting? Anna picked Bart. This was your thought process. We got our pool up, but I mean, we don't show, but your thought on Finland, you've got Barkov as their leading point guy.
Mm-hmm.
What's your reasoning there?
I think he's the best player on that team. And yeah. I think that he's going to be a component in pretty much every finished goal we're going to see in this tournament. I wouldn't be shocked if that happened.
We agreed that he's the best player, but we felt his role was going to be completely, because this guy's also the most defensively accountable guy, that every team, his job is going to be to try and shut down somebody else's number one, which we felt might take away from his offensive production, because he doesn't care about offensive production. Not that I agree with you, he's the best player, probably by a stretch.
Rantanen, sir.
I'm also looking at the lineup placements for Finland, right? Like, he's playing with Rantanen.
Yep.
So if Rantanen's scoring these goals, who is it coming from?
Yep.
Good point. Arturi Lehkonen.
Yeah. Well, he hopes Arturi
Lehkonen. Would Montreal be happy about that?
Oh yeah.
That, what a pickup by the Avs. Like, nobody talks about that pickup by the Avs enough. Like, he's pretty good.
So we went a little rogue too, because I want Auston Matthews. I want for this city, everybody talking about what a great tournament Auston Matthews, whether they win or lose.
Because we know what's going to happen if he doesn't.
Well, it's a lot of first of all, I was surprised he was picked captain, right? Because technically, if you put it up, he's best. But that we had this feeling because he's kind of fly. It's hard to say anybody on these rosters flies under the radar, but we felt like Eichel, for some reason, he's just dangerous in tournaments like this, particularly when he's not being talked about.
So on the U.S., I want to ask this question, because Quinn Hughes isn't playing. How does that move that? Like, obviously he's a great player and it's going to move the needle a bit, but is that like a defining factor for the U.S., especially considering how great Quinn Hughes has been all year, the fact that he's not there?
I think it does, because it's just different. Because honestly, that would be the equivalent of Makar not being there for Canada. He's a guy that's not only we're talking about the Norris, we're talking about him for the heart, for excellent reasons. This guy is leading his team in scoring. This would be his first big event where we get to see him shine. So yeah, I think they lost arguably the most valuable American player other than Hellebuyck this year, right, is not playing. But it was funny for me that I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, the U.S. didn't, they named Sanderson, but he remained at seven. So technically the fill-in defenseman still stayed at seven, whereas in Toronto's roster,
Canada's roster,
the addition has passed one of the original.
Yeah, Sanheim. So, and I think that largely speaks to the fact that Drew Doughty has been on this team the whole time and that they were literally just waiting for the last possible moment for that. The question would have become, like, who is your seven if Drew Doughty is healthy and Alex Petrangelo?
And why would, if he was on this team all time and you knew you had the ability to injure him if he didn't like his stuff, then why wouldn't you just have named him a seven or initially? If you knew that 100% and what his...
I wonder if they truly believe that he was not going to be ready.
Okay.
And then have your seven and that... So that, because I think there's also the mentality for these guys to prepare as well, right? Because some of these guys, like poor Mark Scheifele, told he's not on the team, then he's like... Then they're like, hey, just hang around in case Sid can't go.
Do some wind sprints. Yeah. Need you.
Anna, what about you with Quinn Hughes? That move the needle at all? I know you picked them, as did I. I haven't changed mine. Yeah. I want to also make it clear that I'm rooting for Canada to win.
Yes, me too.
But I think...
I make it clear that you guys, US... once again, play both sides of the fence.
Oh, yeah.
It's okay. So you can't lose then. You can't lose.
Yeah, we can, Sweden. Yeah, you could win this tournament.
Believe me, I could.
That's right. Yeah, we could all lose.
Yeah, I can lose because I'm cheering for the team that if they win, I have to wear a suit to work.
We have a bet, by the way.
Oh, you have a bet.
Mm-hmm. It's funny how you're in this.
Fuchs is already halfway there the way he's dressed for his.
Yeah, apparently it's because I don't have a rock.
No,
rock
you said
start.
That was a dress shirt. That T-shirt is this, a dress shirt.
This That's is not a said. T-shirt.
What is it?
What, this?
Yeah.
This is a Lululemon.
It's not a dress shirt.
It's not a dress shirt?
No.
There's a dress difference between... Okay, we're way off the gate. Okay, fireballs. You come in with Led Zeppelin or a big... That is a rock star T-shirt.
Yeah, but I don't wear those every day.
Okay, I don't ever wear them until, apparently, if I lose, I got to come in dressed with a rock shirt on and his plaid
Burlive shirt.
His Lumberjack area. Merch. Yeah, I'm going to come sliding
and
in my Burlive.
And a hat backwards because he thinks I wear hats.
Wait,
and
you
hat
guys
backwards.
Should both dress like me if Sweden wins.
No. I can promise you that that's not happening.
Oh, my God.
Time now for the Four Nations Face-Off Report brought to you by Intuit QuickBooks. So, your starters for tonight, we mentioned Jordan Binnington going for Sweden. Filip Gustavsson, any surprise there?
For me, I thought Allmark was going to be the guy.
I feel like you mentioned that, too.
Yeah, I thought that was... But I did say it's not clear-cut for Sweden. But I am a little bit shocked by that for sure.
I will say though, the last time, that was just Toronto, wasn't he? When he was in here.
Yeah, he played really
well. He played outstanding because he was a little bit of a stretch there where he was very much like the portion of goaltending that the Canadian goalies have, like he was awesome. Then he had a little bit of a stretch when they were missing a lot of players. They were missing her guy in the wallet there, Kaprizov, for a long time, missing some defensemen, and he struggled a little bit. So, I mean, they obviously believe in this guy. I mean, I just felt Allmark's had a little bit more status.
Yeah. Here's the thing. The year that Allmark won the Vezina Trophy, Filip Gustavsson was the next best goalie in the league at that point. Like, he was getting Vezina consideration. And now, you know, Allmark has been hurt. That's where I kind of held back a little bit. Allmark is, he just got back. So I wondered about that. But again, it's going to be very interesting to see how this thing plays out with goalie rotations, whether it be with Sweden, Canada, the U.S., Finland, whatever the case may be. I wonder about how quick that coaches are going to shuffle lines.
It'll be interesting.
You know, you're not throwing, what do we call it?
The Yahtzee Cup.
The Yahtzee Cup. You're not just...
The blender.
Yeah.
Yeah. It'll be interesting. The thing that I find at these kind of tournaments gets me, it's hard to do that. It is. I mean, you don't want... First of all, you certainly don't want to see it really early because then your team's going to be like, are you kidding me? Like there will be the guys looking over their shoulder like, what? Like, but there'll be matchups that what do we call it when we put on the top line when we go Matthews, Marner, and Tavares, what do they call it, the nuclear option?
The nuclear option, yeah.
How do you find a nuclear? Almost every line's a nuclear option.
It's McDavid, McKinnon, Crosby.
And Crosby?
Yeah, I think
that's
so.
Your nuclear option?
I think so.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Michi.
It's the truth.
That is pretty nuclear, though. Can you imagine that?
Yeah.
You see the three of them talking the other day?
Yeah, pretty good. That was the Four Nations Face-Off Report brought to you by Intuit QuickBooks, a complete view of your business all in one place. That's how you business differently. We got 30 seconds here. Predictions for tonight's game. Anna, we'll start with you.
I have Canada winning this game. I think it's going to be a one-goal game.
Score?
Let's do 3-2.
Okay.
Once again, I agree with Anna, but I'm going 4-1.
I'm going Canada wins 5-3.
Ooh.
Empty netter seals it. Anna, thanks for jumping in. Appreciate it.
Oh, I would say I miss you guys, but this was quite the clown show.
Wow.
Ooh.
I missed you guys. I'm lying.
All right. Hour two is on the horizon. Talk to you then.
Teeing up the biggest games of the night, it's the Fan Pregame with Ailish Forfar and Justin Cuthbert.
Weekdays at 6 p.m. on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. It's the Fan Hockey Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network, Sportsnet 360, and wherever you get your podcast. Matt Marchese, Mike Fiuta here with you. Two-time Stanley Cup champion to you, Mike Fiuta. We got a Stanley Cup champion on the line. He's the Team Canada Management Group lead and St. Louis Blues president of hockey ops at GM. He is Doug Armstrong, and he joins us on game day. Doug, how are you doing today?
I'm good, gentlemen. How are you?
We're good. So, you put this team together. I did the math. It was very difficult for me. 229 days since the original six players were announced, and now we're here. Do you get nervous on game days at all? I know you've been in the league a long time, and you know, I mean, you've been a part of some big games too. Do nerves ever creep into it for you?
Not really, quite honestly. You know, you just go about your day. We went down and watched the morning skate today. It was an optional. Talk to some of the people down there, it's a relaxed mood. I think guys are excited about, you know, getting back to international hockey. And I think nerves come when it's winter go home games.
Very, very, very well said. So Army, when you sit there, so you've got these things, and obviously we've been talking, we've had a bunch of coaches on, and all the coaches that we've kind of talked to are either, I mean, other than Chris Knobloch, I think he's snowed in, his kids are going to school, they're either in Hawaii or they're enjoying time on the beach. I don't know where Monty's at. Enjoying, and obviously well-deserved time down, little break. With management, I mean, there really is no downtime. I mean, were you scouting?
Yeah, I was over in Europe last week at the U18s in Sweden. Watched that. It was a good tournament. It's always good to see this year's crop of young players come out from the Five Nations. And the tournament was good. I got to Montreal on Monday. And I think you're right. I think a lot of the managers and assistant managers are probably taking a few days off, but there's American League games going. There's junior games going. There's always things to do. And I think, quite honestly, guys get bored relatively quick this time of year if they're not out watching games and staying active.
It's amazing because, I mean, I remember even with Dean and stuff like that. Like once you almost, it's like after the trade deadlines, which is almost similar to once you make your announcement, like other than the injury stuff that you had to make the decision with Drew Doughty and stuff, it's kind of your job's done with regards to the team. And now you just have to sit back and watch. And plus, in your case, continue to run your National Hockey League team on a 24/7 basis. So it's kind of never can sleep, but it's probably got to be nice. I mean, you've had such great success, not only in the National Hockey League, but putting these groups together, to just sit back and kind of watch your work and enjoy it a little bit.
Yeah, well, this one has a different feel to it just because of the Olympics just a year away. Usually, you know, with the events are 4 years away where they're, you know, to have something so quickly. So the management group is going to stay together for the Olympics. So there's a lot going on of not only the players that are here, but the players that we scouted to get onto this team. That we're just on the outside looking in. I think it's going to be the same group we're going to watch from the rest of this year into to the start of next year, and hopefully till Christmas or January 1st when we have to name that team. And so it has a little different feel for it because there seems to be, you want to win today, but usually these events you're just worried about this game. But there's a lot of projecting and watching and trying to see synergies and little nuances of the players that are playing that can transfer to a year from now.
So, Army, I hope this isn't a dumb question, which I'm capable of asking. But when you look at this, you guys put together, it's an amazing team, right? It's an amazing team. Obviously, there was the six that were named earlier. And from an outside standpoint, you know, people are like, oh, man, you know, some of these young guys, they need to, some of the fresh young blood. And I was like, they're putting this team together to have success today. Is there any thought, or is it even possibility of having some of those younger players that weren't named to the team, vis-a-vis Berard or Celebrini or
Bedard or Celebrini, yeah.
To be around the team, to just kind of get a vibe, like not on the ice or anything, but to be around the team and kind of see what this group of friggin' legends, the way they handle themselves.
Yeah, that would be something that I think the PA would frown on pretty quickly.
Yeah. No, that's what I figured. That was my thought.
They're big on days off.
I just think that,
you know, this tournament is for today, and, you know, was never even brought up to have that type of a taxi squad or people that could learn from it. I think there'd be certainly benefit into that too, but, you know, sometimes, and you've been around the playoffs, when you have the black aces, that gets old pretty quick too after a while. You can learn only for so long, and then it turns into a, you know, okay, like a Groundhog Day thing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it would be great to have those guys, but you do pick that stuff up, quite honestly, at the World Championships. You know, last year we had some young players there, and they got to see different coaches. And when you've only been in the league 1, 2, 3 years, you're most likely just been with one coach. So you learn different things from different management groups, different coaches. But I think at this event, it's just, you know, eye on the prize and just move ahead. And, you know, I think there was a thought process. Do you eliminate some veteran players because they're going to be locked next year anyways, and look at younger players? But then you realize very quickly that the veteran players want to play in this event. They haven't had international play for so long. I think if you do this every other year for the next, say, 20 years, I'm not, you know, you'll be able to input players at a different rate if you've done this 5 or 6 times. But it's been so long since we've had a best on best. Even in the Four Nations event, I think everyone wanted to put their best teams forward, and quite honestly, the best players wanted to play in it.
I have to. I just thought to myself how nice it must be. I remember working with Dean Lombardi, and to be able to put a team like this together and not have your salary cap guy around telling you can't do this, it's got to be heaven.
Yeah, it is. It is nice not having to worry about anything like that just for a couple of weeks.
Well, and Team Canada has the second highest cap hit among the four teams in there. The U.S. has an even higher cap hit. Fuchs is saying that they're cheating already. But when you put this team together, and I obviously, you know, John Cooper is the head coach, and he's got a wonderful staff. But do you find yourself, like, how many bar napkins are you going through putting lines together and thinking, like, oh, wow, this could work, and oh, wow, look at how this works. And then you end up with Power Play 1 that has Sidney Crosby, Connor McDavid, Nathan MacKinnon, Sam Reinhart, and Cale Makar. I mean, this has got to be one of those things where you put this team together and you're in complete awe of the talent that you can assemble on one roster.
Well, it goes back to, and I was fortunate to work behind Steve Yzerman at 2010 and 2014. And quite honestly, in 2010, it felt really like that. Like, with your day job, when you go out and you watch other teams, you don't watch this level of player. They're never available. So you're always looking at that next tier or two or three down. There might be movement that you might be able to pry out for your own team. So, like, you would never go scout Sidney Crosby, you know, just a waste of time. Now, he would take over your eyes in the game because he was so good, but you would never go in saying, I'm going to watch this player, or even go to a lesser player than Sidney, you know, like, you know, other players on this team. They're just not available. So it does take a little bit of time to watch those players and not just be in awe of them, but say, okay, well, I'm not comparing him to what I'm seeing now. I'm comparing him to the best player that I'm going to see tomorrow night. And it's not difficult, but it's challenging because you're not used to evaluating that level of player against that level of player.
Is it more difficult? And again, I was just trying to think about, I remember Dean doing the, what was the World Cup of
World
Hockey?
Cup, yeah.
And how much, you got to be passionate to be, and you know, Dean, passion is not an issue, but how much, the extra time, because he went out of his way to make sure everybody saw that the LA Kings aren't losing a bit of me, like of my time and my dedication. And clearly some of the moves you've made to bolster the Blues and some of these trades, it's not a factor. But when you get down to the short strokes, hypothetically, I mean, you've got a great young player in like a Robert Thomas or something. When you have to make those phone calls to tell somebody that they're not a part of it, they're always difficult calls to make. Those ones take a little bit more time?
Yeah, because you have a relationship with these guys, and but ultimately, you know, I again go back to working for Steve, and he's very clear on what his job responsibilities are, and you have to park your team for what's best for the country or best for the team that you're putting together. And I think the coaches understand that, the players understand that. I think from a managed perspective, you said, geez, I'd like to sneak this guy on that team because he's going to gain so much knowledge and experience.
Absolutely.
But, you know, you have to then fight that urge, and you have to do what's best for the players that are here. And, you know, our responsibility is as a management group and a coaching group is to give the player, the 23 players or 25 in the Olympics, the best opportunity to reach their goals of winning medals and then hopefully gold. And you can't put personal agendas ahead of that.
Yeah.
You're asking the players not to put personal agendas ahead of that. And if you're not leading that charge, then it's pretty a shallow thing to ask them to do.
No, it's so well said. But I was amazed because some of these guys, first it was when I was first involved at the National League level, you forget because some of these guys have never been cut from it. So it's usually the first time some of them have ever been cut in their lives is the World Juniors, right? Or don't make a team that they're just expected to make teams. And then you think some of these players have never not made it. They've always made teams, right? And I love the passion, too, that they show that are these guys, the ones that just want to, they want the team to do well, and they're right by your bat phone. Just if something were to happen that you needed to add somebody, there is no ego whatsoever with wanting to be the next guy to be a part of such special events.
Yeah, I think you look back on, I don't know the exact year, but there used to actually be tryouts for these teams or camps where they would go on the ice and they would compete, and then you would whittle that roster down. That was probably a lot harder than it is now because you're making positive phone calls now more than negative ones. And there's not like one-on-one competition in a camp where you're trying to bring a group of guys together, and guys are buying into that, but they also want to make the team. So they have to push and prod and get noticed. In these events now, it's just pick your best 23 or 25 for the Olympics and move them ahead. But you're right. It's an interesting process because the guys just want to be on it, and you do really get the sense when you call them and they say, "I'm just happy to be on the team." And guys that don't dress, like we're gonna have two players not dressing tonight, they're just as excited today as they were 2 days ago to be a part of this, and they're going to be there. They're going to push along, and then when the opportunity arises, they're going to take full advantage of it. But I think everybody understands on any country that's participating how special it is just to be part of it, and just to, you know, like learning is such a great part of life, and everybody learns so much in these events from other coaches or managers or players or different countries. It's just a wealth of knowledge here, and, you know, shame on the people that don't take advantage of it.
Doug Armstrong, Team Canada Management Group Lead and St. Louis Blues President of Hockey Ops and GM, joining Matt Marchese and Mike Fiuta here on the Fan Hockey Show. So Jordan Binnington gets the start tonight. You know him as well as anyone. And of course, I mean, you know, you've been asked questions about the goaltending position as it pertains to Team Canada. And you know, I know that both of these, two of the three goalies have Stanley Cups, something that the other nations can't say. Why is Jordan Binnington the right guy for this team in this tournament for this game tonight?
Well, I think that he has the ability, and he's showing the ability to play in big games. In his defense, it's not like we've put in the 77 Canadians in front of him the last couple of years. So, you know, when we've had good teams, he rises to the challenge, and we've exposed him a little bit the last couple of years as we're, moving to a different generation of team and players. But he's a gamer, and I think the players on this team are starting to understand the competitive nature that he has and when they've competed against him. And, you know, the proof's going to be in the pudding. We can all talk all we want right now, but next week, Friday, someone's going to be deemed correct and someone's going to be deemed incorrect, and we hope our country is deemed correct.
I know Jordan was asked about it. He's a fiery guy, and he was asked about, well, we know because he's tried to fight other goalies, and we're still waiting for that one. I'm sure you're not waiting for that one fight, Doug, but I'm sure he's been. that chip on his shoulder. I mean, he's kind of been doubted, and when he came in and helped you guys win a Stanley Cup, he was a big part of that. How much does that play into the dynamic of Jordan Binnington when he is at his best, is that chip on his shoulder?
I think early in your career, in his career, you could use that as a motivator. But now he's been in the league so long, I don't think when you play as long as they do, I think it's just your internal drive. I don't think you need to grasp for things to build off of. He understands who he is. He understands what he is, and he wants to be the best that he can be. And even you go back to the goalie fights and things like that. There was a while, I got to be honest, like 2 or 3 years ago, I was just saying, like, just get it over with, you know? Like, you want it, get it done, and let's move on. And then he just had it. He understood that isn't who. That's not what he needs to do for us to be successful. And if I had to hazard a bet, I guarantee, like, my bet would be he would never get in a goalie fight, because that's just, he's a competitor, but he doesn't need to do those things. And I don't think he needs a chip on his shoulder to have success, because you can't artificially do that over year in, year out for the better part of a decade. It just has to be, you want to be the best you can be. And I think that's where he's at, and that's what we see every day in St. Louis.
Hey, Doug, I got to give you a quick little story, a Jordan Binnington story. He was in Owen Sound. I remember when I had my day, I brought the cup to Owen Sound, and Jordan Binnington was the celebrity in the background signing autographs. So I got to meet him and see how fiery he is. But during his combine interview, Ron Hextall used to tell me all the time that all the Westerners are, that's where all the toughness comes from, out West. Eh? And so I asked a couple Western League goalies, and I love the kids that know the history of the game. I asked who Ron Hextall was, and they were like, I think he owns a garage in Brandon. And then I asked Jordan Binnington who he was, and his eyes lit up. Ronnie, I've got pictures of Ronnie all over my house. So I had a feeling at that time that he had a little bit of feistiness on top of being a great goaltender.
Yeah, just a bit.
And I had to tell, I had to break it to Hexie that the only guy that knew him was a kid from Ontario, which even busted him up even more.
Doug, speaking of the St. Louis Blues, just a quick aside here, because, like, yes, you're at the Four Nations Faceoff, but, you know, you have your own hockey team that you're dealing with too. How do you balance that during this week and a bit here with the tournament? And, you know, we spoke to Elliot Friedman, and he said, you know, people are talking because we're getting close to the deadline. How do you balance those two things over the course of the next 10 days?
Well, I think, as you know, this job is it's multitasking or whatever. The phone can ring at any time and you're prepared for it. And this is it's an exciting time for the fans and for everybody, quite honestly, hockey. I do feel for the players, because there's so much, I'll be polite and call it speculation, that's out there that's likely not true. And the guys have to deal with it. And so, I understand that it's great for talk radio. It's great for a lot of things. But I think when you're living it day to day, I feel bad for the guys. But as you guys know, like, you can't confirm or deny every rumor that's out there. Because I would say to the guys, like, I can't tell you that's not true, because when it is true, then I'm going to lie to you. So we just don't comment on any of that stuff. And I think all managers are the same way. But it's not a difficult time, but I do feel for the players, because they're just, and they understand it. It's just the next layer, the girlfriend or the wife, or especially if you're a little older player and you have kids, and then your mother and father are calling, like, what's going on? And it's almost like this 2 week break is not great for that, because we have like a game today and a game tomorrow, then a day off. So if you're not talking about these games, you're talking about trades.
go ahead.
It just keeps building, and I feel bad for the guys that have to go through this all the teams.
Would you care to take a stab at which one you would like to deny that's not happening, or any of those stuff?
He's a master.
I politely call it speculation.
Yes. Yes, and I know what we call it, unpolitely.
We call it work.
Unpolitely, absolutely. No, that's class. It's funny. He's got this Matty Marchese guy. He's a wonderful hockey mind, but every time he gets a GM in, we had Jim Nill on, but Jim was on Zoom, so we got his facial expression, and his phone rang.
His phone rang, and I said, Jim, if that's a trade, you can break it on there, no
problem.
Him.
He starts to go all Friedman press on him, and all of a sudden, so we've got you, so you can keep your card face to yourself. We're trying to figure out what the Blues are
doing. We got somebody else last. Oh, Craig Conroy. Yeah. Fuchs was already throwing me under the bus when he said, Craig, he's going to ask you a question that I know you're not going to answer.
All I can tell Army is I was just looking at the Puckpedia there, and I think it looks like you got a little bit of a hole in the draft there from second out of five. So if I was a scout, I'd be sitting outside Dean's office scratching at the door.
Well, it's funny. Like, we put that offer sheet in last year, and we were excited to get the two players.
Oh, wow.
And our amateur guys were really excited, except they said, well, we have a second or third now. I said, Greg, you can't have everything.
you've got good tickets to the draft. Enjoy the meal, boys.
Yeah, exactly.
And plus, you know what? You got a Stanley Cup banner, so enjoy your meal.
Yeah. Or many meals. Yeah. Doug, listen, this has been a lot of fun. Thank you so much for taking some time. I know it's been super busy. We greatly appreciate it. Good luck tonight. Good luck the rest of the tournament. And, of course, good luck with the St. Louis Blues the rest of the way. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks, Army.
Well, thank you very much for having me on, guys. You guys take care.
Doug Armstrong, the lead for the Team Canada Management Group here at the Four Nations Faceoff, also of the 2026 edition of Canada at the Men's Olympic Hockey Tournament, and St. Louis Blues president of hockey ops and general manager.
It's funny, a guy like that, and me obviously being in that position before, he's one of those guys that there's certain guys that are sitting in those seats that people they roll their eyes and wonder what they're doing there. And then you get guys like that that everybody just respects the hell out of. Well, and the majority of them there, but he's so good at it. He's always, no matter what his position, whether the team's up or down, he's always been very approachable, and it was great. That's one of those ones. I remember calling him, obviously, like Braden Shen and I were talking like crazy when Shenner was getting his first cup and stuff like that, but I remember texting him right away about, he just felt good. Mm-hmm. Felt so good, and he gets right back to you and stuff like that, so it'll be interesting. I mean, I think Canada's in very, very good hands.
There's a reason why he is the management lead with all the potential options that were there. There's a reason why Doug Armstrong is there. Also, Doug has been, like you mentioned, even for me in this business, Doug has always been, you know, very good to get back to me. And sometimes he says no, but a lot of times he says yes to come on, as he did here. So if you missed it, be sure to check out the podcast. Doug Armstrong, a lot of fun. I liked his answer about Jordan Binnington. I mean, I think you have to ask that question because he's the one who knows him best. But, you know, and I said this earlier too. It's like the defense that is in front of Jordan Binnington is a far cry from what he has.
A little bit of accountability for what was in front of
him. He said it, yeah.
In front of him. So it'll be interesting that way because it's an adjustment too.
Of course.
Because now he's not going to see the quality of shot that he sees all the time. He's got to be even more focused.
Yeah.
And plus you've got, like as he said, he didn't have the 97 Montreal Canadian blue line.
77.
But he's also doesn't have the $180 million salary cap coming on the offense from all the other teams around. So
yeah,
it's going to be fun. Lots of fun.
It's going to be a fun tournament. Canada versus Sweden tonight, 8 p.m. Eastern. You can watch that on Sportsnet and, of course, Sportsnet Plus. Chris Cuthbert, Craig Simpson, Kyle Bukauskas will be on the call. That's it for us today. Thanks to Andrew Adams. Thanks to Jake Schultz, Mike Gentile, and, of course, my co-host Mike Feder on the other side. Yes, everyone in the greater Toronto area, drive safe. I will be taking a snowmobile to work tomorrow. Hopefully there's enough gas. Thanks to Todd McClellan, Anna Dua, Elliot Freeman, Doug Armstrong. Tomorrow, Ryan Huska, Elliot Freeman, and more. Mailbag. Talk to you tomorrow. Bye-bye.